Hello, it's Matt Patterson here, but only for a little bit. If you're listening to this during October, then right now I am physically on my sabbatical, which is a very lovely perk of working at Help Scout, helpscout.com/careers. We get a month off every 4 years, sort of like going to the Olympics to compete in having a rest. Everyone wins! Anyway, since I'm not actually here, instead of an episode of The Supportive this month, I am sharing an episode from another podcast that I enjoy, Epical Growth. It's a growth support podcast. It's hosted by the excellent Sarah Caminiti, whose surname that my computer always wants to correct to Community, which is appropriate because she is a wonderful presence in the support community. And in this episode, Sarah is talking to Ben McCormack, who is a really thoughtful support leader who I've known and appreciated for many years. And Sarah and Ben have a great conversation about customer journey mapping. Sarah mentions in the episode that Ben delivered a talk on this topic at a support-driven conference, and I was in that room in Las Vegas to see it live, and I can confirm it was a really interesting and very practical talk. So I'm going to hand over to Sarah now, but I will pop back in just a few times with some comments as we go, and then I'll wrap things up at the end. So thank you, Sarah, for your permission to chop up your episode just a little bit.
Like, it's like your CEO noticed something and they called it out in Slack. And then you can go, hey, let's walk this back along the customer journey. And then you get the different people responsible for those parts of the journey involved. And you just say, how do we get here? You know, because it's rarely just a problem with customer support. It's support noticed. And then you work backwards and you go, okay, how did this end up being such a big thing?
This is Epical Growth, a growth support podcast. And I'm your host, Sarah Caminiti.
Hi, everybody. I am recording this in Cambridge, England, which is crazy. I flew in yesterday and I went on my first punting experience. Thank you, Sarah Hatter, for the recommendation and the food recommendations and the everything recommendations. I would have been wandering aimlessly without you. Today's episode is with the lovely Ben McCormack. Ben is a fractional executive with Boulder right now. He's got a pretty cool career history. I met Ben because I was assigned as his talk editor when he was giving a talk at the Support Driven Expo in May, and it went off without a hitch. He didn't really need my help at all, but I'm so glad that I was paired with him because I got to meet him. I wouldn't have met him otherwise. Ben has turned into someone that I consider a friend and one of the loveliest human beings, just the best heart and purpose. And I'm just so pumped for this episode. When he started talking about his support-driven speech, he was explaining everything about journey mapping, and I knew nothing about journey mapping. I don't even know if I had heard the term journey mapping before, which I'm a little embarrassed to say, but bear with me here. So he was explaining customer journey mapping, and the root of it was just asking the question why over and over again to find what the actual cause of concern was when this customer experienced its actual hiccup. And that's usually not when they reach out to support. And I found so many parallels with a lot of the trend analysis work that I was doing and wanted to know as much as humanly possible. And he was kind enough to agree to give me more of his time since I ended up taking up most of the talk editor time just asking him questions about what he was doing. And he shares some great insights, some really cool tips, and explains the importance of understanding your customer long before we usually spend time understanding our customer and what that does to bring a company together. So thank you, Ben McCormack, for spending more time with me and sharing this with the Epical Growth community. And if you're a new listener, welcome. If you're coming back, yes, I'm so glad that you're here. New listeners, yes, I'm so glad that you're here too. And I can't wait for you to come back for more and more episodes too. But this is a great place to start. And enjoy. So without me rambling anymore, here's Ben McCormick explaining the power of customer-centric journey mapping on Epical Growth, episode 6. What? Enjoy!
Well, hello, I'm Ben McCormick. I've got over a decade of experience building high-performing customer support teams at SaaS companies like Trello and Fullstory. I've also been the director of member experience at Saltbox. I'm currently a consultant. I work as a fractional executive for Boulder. I do customer experience consulting for them. Boulder is a global business process outsourcer. And I was a self-taught software developer. I have a degree in philosophy, and I got my MBA recently at Georgia Tech. So that's me.
Awesome. Ben, I'm so excited to have you here. We, just for a little bit of context for the listeners, I was connected with Ben through Support Driven. He and I were talking about his talk, and it opened up my eyes to this world of customer journey mapping and what that actually means. And so I was super pumped when Ben agreed to give us some of his time to connect and actually talk about what this is. And so thank you so much, Ben, for being here. And I'm really excited to learn more about customer journey mapping and what it means for the business. But also, before we go into that, I'm very curious about how you found yourself such a resource for this specific space with such a broad history of your career. Like, sure. What brought you to this, to customer journey mapping?
Well, it's funny. I think, you know, I got into the customer experience world, which we'll say is like the very broad category of people who do work in support, success, customer experience management, that whole thing. I got in there via customer support, like a lot of people do. My first job in support was I was a support engineer at Fog Creek Software. That was the company that Trello spun out of. And I think, like a lot of tech companies, support starts with somebody saying, there's an inbox. Can we get somebody to do those emails? Because the product team is, and the founders are exhausted and tired and they want you to focus on higher leverage tasks. That's what their board is telling them. And so that is often the starting point for building teams. And that's how I kind of got into it, was I was hired as part of a team where that was kind of the goal. And so because this organization, Fog Creek Software, was heavy in engineering, we had a heavy engineering approach to support. So depending on where you are, your support team is going to probably take on the culture a bit of the founder.
This is an unavoidable truth. Founders who really care about customer service, they'll just hire different people. They'll spend their time and money differently. They'll prioritize different work. For better or for worse, the founders will shape the company culture for a long time.
But in any case, there's a question of like, where does support live? If you ask about journey mapping and who would own journey mapping, that is probably under marketing, big marketing, not marketing tactics necessarily in terms of like, you know, your marketing campaigns and your content marketing and that sort of thing. But in terms of just like big, like how do you devise your strategy, your go-to-market strategy? So that can include things like product and product marketing. But when you talk about the customer journey, really everybody is part of it. Everybody in the business is part of it and engages with the customer. But frequently, especially at smaller companies, you don't have it as a discipline. The discipline that would own something like journey mapping would be customer experience management. Mm-hmm. It would be like a program that you could potentially have, which would own journey mapping. If you had a chief customer officer, they're going to own the customer journey. But it's going to be, the important thing is, it's separate from the support inbox. If you were running a call center, it's separate from the call center. It's separate from your customer success account management functions. It's separate from all of those things. It's this thing that kind of sits on top of the entire business. So it's a fair question to ask anybody. Well, how would you come to discover journey mapping? And so for me, it started with when I was running the support team at Fullstory. You know, you start by, you just take care of the inbox, and then you hire a high performing team to take care of the inbox. But at some point, taking care of the inbox is more than just, very quickly, it's more than just answering the questions. You have to escalate things to engineering. You have to have processes to escalate things to engineering. You have to have ways to give product needs and feedback to the product team.
support wears so many hats. And one of my concerns about the push that we're seeing out in the world for AI-first customer service is that the AI can't replace all those hats. It'll give you a cap or a weird fedora, but it's not able to currently address all of those other roles that are hidden inside support team.
But then you start finding things that are maybe outside the scope of the usual teams you work with. And so in our case, it was, you know, we had gotten pretty good at escalating bugs to product, the product and engineering teams. And that feedback loop was pretty tight. But if anything came in for sales, it was like, how do we bring this up? I mean, and they had the sales had their own goals, their own processes, their own ways of working with support. And most of the time when we were dealing with support questions, they were from customers. They weren't from prospects. But occasionally somebody would be trialing the software. They hadn't signed up yet, or they're just curious and their question ends up in the support inbox, despite all the attempts on the website to guide them towards a salesperson. And so you end up getting involved, and there's an experience element to those interactions that spans beyond the journey where somebody is a customer and goes back to when they're not even yet a customer. So we started with having at Full Story, we had, what did we call them? We called, we used to call our customer experience team hugging.
Oh, do not like that.
And so we had these meetings that we called smugging, which was sales, marketing, and hugging. Yeah, it's ridiculous. But it was like a cross-functional team. And this is a pretty well understood like company evolution paradigm, is you go from all the teams kind of share responsibility, but nobody really owns it. Then you have a cross-functional team that doesn't have the right level of power and authority to get stuff done. And then you give an actual program to it. So we had a cross-functional team that was asking the right questions, but didn't have the bandwidth or leverage or resources to make the changes they needed. So I started leading I handed over the management of the support team to the person who had been kind of like my number two there, Kaylee. She's still running the team today. She's doing a phenomenal job. So I handed the team over to her and started leading a customer experience management program. And it was awesome. And I was super excited to get into the work, but this was February of 2020. And if you'll remember, there was a global pandemic started and that upended everything. And so the company did layoffs and that position was eliminated. And so, but I got a taste of it. Like I got a taste of it then, this idea of this world of like, oh, journey maps are a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And what a cool evolution of understanding the impact of connection and how everything does have a role in the product development, the actual business operating effectively. You have to eliminate those gray areas and define where everything lives within that customer journey and how they can work together to make it be the best that it can be.
That's right. And I think, you know, I remember when I first approached journey mapping, I felt embarrassed, or I felt a lot of imposter syndrome, because it was like, people are looking at me to be an expert on customer experience, and I had never done journey mapping before. And everybody has never done journey mapping before. Right. Like you always have to have a starting point. And so, you know, you Google and you see like people like, this is a journey map, and then this is a journey map, and you can get pretty intimidated pretty quickly. I mean, you can, and large companies do. Like if you're a, you know, like a company like Delta Airlines, you don't have this resource internally. You were going to go hire a consulting firm and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars. And part of the output of that hundreds of thousands of dollars is going to be a very complex journey map. Lots of sticky notes on the wall, people understanding things. And the reason you need somebody from the outside when you're an organization of that scale is you often can't see. Your teams can't get far enough away. So that consultant's perspective can really help. But when you're small, especially when you're a startup, you're not hiring consultants. We actually look at a couple consulting firms to come in and help us understand our customer journey. Ended up not moving forward with the effort, but it was an interesting process just to go, what would somebody sell us if they, you know, if we were, you know, trying to get help with this? And you do get a lot of journeys. But the thing is it can be intimidating no matter where you're starting to go, I don't even know where to start. And so I think one of our exercises was just like, just make it. And so I had a team member who worked in product marketing, and she had a background in support, and like She's really a phenomenal team member. And so she's like, we're just going to do it. And she was on our cross-functional team. And so I was like, she named the journey stages and just jumped in and just started saying, this is what the customer does. This is what the customer does. But even then, the challenge, you know, you can print it out on a piece of paper and, or, you know, open up an Excel spreadsheet or Google Sheet or whatever, and just be like, these are the stages, these are the different actions. And there's some basic things you can do, but it gets overwhelming very, very quickly, because you think of all the different ways that people can become aware of your product or service, all the different things that happen in the sales process, all the things that go into the legal contract. And you're just like, well, where do I start? People are asking about a journey map, and I don't even know how much time to put into that. And I got there as well. And that's where, you had mentioned my talk earlier, I had this insight. This would have been about three or four years ago, where I was like, you know, just knowing the journey stages and being able to take a problem and work backwards along the journey stages is incredibly powerful. And so that gets us into, you have to have journey stages. Right. But the shortcut with the walking it back is you don't have to have everything mapped out. I mean, if you do, like if you already have everything mapped out and you can go and you can kind of point and go, all right, this spot on the customer journey, this happened, great, go for it. But if you don't have that, you can at least work backwards, you know, and you can start with a standard list of journey stages and then go, okay, we had a problem. We had something that was broken, and that usually people are talking about, like, it's like your CEO noticed something and they called it out in Slack. And then you can go, hey, let's walk this back along the customer journey. And then you get the different people responsible for those parts of the journey involved. And you just say, how do we get here? You know, cause it's rarely just a problem with customer support. It's support noticed. Right. And then you work backwards and you go, okay, how did this end up being such a big thing?
I think that way of thinking is such an important piece to leadership, especially in a startup or in a smaller company, because you have to stop thinking of just this one funnel over here, this one bucket over here. It's like, what is happening either? So if you have like a team member that made a mistake, instead of approaching it in just a black and white, you messed this up. No, okay, let's take a look at why you chose to do it this way. And is there documentation that needs to be updated? Was there a miscommunication? Do we have different speaking, you know, styles to understand what we need to do? And it's asking those questions to ignite conversations that it sounds like journey mapping forces you to do from a business perspective.
Yes. In you know, I think you're alluding to what I call the five whys. I think it might be standard. It's not a thing I came up with.
Five Whys was described by Taichi Ono, who's the father of the Toyota production system, and ideas that have been adapted all over the place in business. And he also developed the seven wastes and the 10 precepts. A man loved a list.
I learned this at Fog Creek. But the five whys, which is like, okay, a team member said the wrong thing to a customer. Why? The documentation was wrong. Why was the documentation wrong? Because it hadn't been updated. Why hadn't it been updated? The team doesn't have bandwidth. Why doesn't the team have bandwidth? Because we cut hiring, you know, like all of these kinds of things. And that work is really, really crucial. The added dimension of adding the customer journey on top of that takes you to, like, it's not just within the locus of your team. And you're always like, when you go backwards on the journey, it's not always, you're not always gonna, like, the kind of the boundary is that purchase decision, that step of the journey where, you know, where the customer goes from being a prospect to actually being a customer. You're not going to take every issue and then go back to your sales team and make big changes. But it is important to ask questions, because you get, like, I had an example at Saltbox. I was doing this process somewhat intuitively. We had Saltbox is a business that provides, it's like a WeWork for warehouse space.
Oh, okay.
You know, like if you need warehouse space, but you need the flexibility to be able to move up and down in space. And then they have different services that help small business owners who need warehouse space run their business. And at the time, Saltbox had a fulfillment offering. And they've since closed down their fulfillment offering. But in fulfillment, you would have customers send in their inventory, and then Saltbox would manage it and make sure it all got, you know, so if you had an e-commerce store, Shopify store, you could just drop your inventory off with Saltbox and Saltbox would run it. And this is pretty standard third-party logistics stuff that you could get anywhere, but we were, you know, trying to figure out our spot in the market. And one of the challenges we had was we had the hardest time onboarding some of our customers. And then we were like, man, and it wasn't even actually, here's the funny thing. They were successful with us. Like if you just looked at a journey map, they were paying us. They were happy to be using us. They weren't always like the most knowledgeable customers, but they didn't make any money for us, you know? So we would look at it and be like, we're getting $50 in revenue. And then I would go, what happened? You know? And then so part of that challenge was I didn't have enough resources to onboard everybody that we were saying we were going to need to onboard to meet our goals. So, you know, this is a walk back the customer journey moment. You go, okay, at the renewal stage, we're renewing somebody paying us $50 a month. Would we keep doing that? Probably if it's not too costly to maintain them. Fine. Okay. Work back one step earlier at the success phase. Do we want somebody who's paying us $50 a month to be successful? Yes. Okay. Now you're in the onboarding phase. Do we want to onboard somebody knowing that they're only going to generate $50 a month in revenue? No, we don't. But if you got them, if you sign them, you're going to do it because you want them to have a good experience. You don't want to damage your brand, so you will. So the only way to fix that problem is to go back earlier to the purchase phase. And then you go, would we sign somebody if they're only going to pay $50 a month? No, we're not, because we know it's not worth it at the renewal stage.
Right.
And then you go back even further. Like, okay, if we're in the education phase and our sales team is doing sales discovery and they determine that the customer's volume is only going to generate $50 a month worth of revenue for us, then we'll stop there. And then you can go one back step further back in the awareness phase and go, are we advertising to the right people? How do they even end up in our funnel? You know? And so that was a problem that like, there really was nothing I could do at the phases of the journey that I was in control of. In this case, it was the director of member experience. So things would have started mostly in the onboarding phase. I didn't have anything in my control to prevent that problem, but that was one of the biggest problems impacting our business, you know, so being able to mentally do it. But then if you're trying to share it with somebody else, you know, it's like, you're trying to explain why this is an issue. It's like, well, let me draw out for you how I got here. I'm going to do it. I walked backwards and you can see like, if you want me to onboard a lot of new members so we can hit our revenue goals, they have to be making money or else I'm not going to have the resources to meet the onboarding targets that you set for us. And I found that process to be useful. And at this point, it kind of comes intuitively because I've done it a bunch of times. But just being able to know the stages are there, they exist. And it's not about our company's departments. It's about our customer's journey.
Right. No, I think that touches on such a great headspace to be in when you are trying to present problems or solutions or ideas or things that you're flagging, like when you're trend tracking, like what is the actual root of all of this? And you just keep going back to see what that impact is and getting to that phase of, wait a second, are we advertising to the right people? So when do you reach that point though in your company, like journey, if you're starting from the beginning ground floor, do you enter into building out your company and having the journey in the back of your mind, or do you need to wait until you've hit a certain moment to be able to analyze what's actually happening?
I mean, I think you can always be doing it. I mean, it's not a costly exercise to, you know, sit there and be like, what are the phases of our journey? But it probably is helpful to have at least product market fit for your product. I mean, if you don't have product market fit, identifying the journey stages can be helpful so that you avoid spinning your wheels. That was, you know, like if you don't have product market fit, then that means you're going to probably pour a lot of money into trying to bring in customers and then they don't ever get to, you don't ever, they don't, it doesn't ever become profitable. But, you know, even when you're just starting and you're kind of looking for that problem solution fit, like, does this even exist? Do you need the journey stages there? No. Do you need to be aware of them? Yes. Like you should know at least what they are. But when the business is, you know, like you found product market fit, you're definitely growing. You start seeing like, oh, we raised that seed round and now we're raising a Series A and we're starting to fill in key functions. That's a good time to just say, what are the names of the different stages of our journey? Can we agree on those? Like, you don't have to do a full, you know, get everybody in a room and whiteboard it. You can do that. You don't have to do that. But if you can agree on the names, that can be really powerful. And that's not my idea. That comes from Jean Bliss, the author of Chief Customer Officer 2.0. She talks about the importance of naming your stages and what that does for your company. Because then you say, for example, like in the last example I used, I talked about ad spend. You could just say, somebody go to marketing and tell them to stop buying ads targeting, you know, low budget customers. You could say that. But it's much more powerful and much more integrated to say, we are targeting customers in the awareness stage, not the marketing stage. Mm-hmm. We're targeting people in the awareness stage or whatever your company calls that. Mm-hmm. And then you use that common language and then you make the jump to your internal teams. Because when you do that, it gives your team members a way to align around the customer's journey and not around your department's. So like the classic example is customer support. You assume that customer support questions happen during the success phase, but that's not necessarily true. And actually, the times where a customer shows up in phases that are not the success phase are the ones that show you usually that you need clearly defined phases. Because like somebody just started, they just signed and they don't know how to get started. You could call that the success phase, but really they're in the onboarding phase. Do you even have an onboarding phase? If you don't, pro tip, you need one. Like you need something. It's like the best way you can invest in the success of your customers. But then you get into things like, you know, somebody reaches out and they go, we're thinking about canceling. Well, they're in the renewal phase. They've had a break in their loyalty loop. They're thinking about not being a customer anymore. What's your fun? Like, if you recognize that as the renewal phase and not just the success phase gone wrong, it is both of those things. But you might go, you might say, do we need to have a specific motion for when this kinds of thing happens? You know, you can go kind of crazy with it. Like if you try to cancel your cable subscription and call up the cable company, they have literally dedicated departments that handle only this problem.
Listen to my previous episode about the greatest mistakes in customer service history for an example of this. But I love this idea of identifying what phase any particular customer is in, because it really changes what they're most likely to need from you. I'm sure you've had this experience. You've got that onboarding customer, they've got a million annoying questions and you're thinking, oh my God, we're going to need an extra person just to answer Terry. But then one day, Terry hits a point where everything is solid and they'll happily pay for years to come. Not every time, but it does happen. The customer moves on to a new phase. Anyway, Ben was talking about retention teams.
Mm-hmm. You may decide you don't want to do that, but like that's where that eventually leads. It just gets you to ask the question, you know, where did this ticket come from? This ticket came from somebody who was in the, oh, they're in the sales. No, sales isn't a phase. You know, like you want to say sales phase, but they're not selling something. The customer is in the learning, education, whatever you call that phase. You've decided, which means they're learning. Sometimes they're talking to a sales team member, but sometimes they're doing their research online. How does that change how you support them and who they talk to and who needs to make a change?
That's really interesting, that split in that phase of, what is the customer experience when you do have that, you know, back and forth with an actual salesperson? What is the customer experience when you're gathering information on your own? And how do you identify that when you're trying to support someone? And how do you, Ben?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. I think, and this gets into questions about like, how does the company, this is really your sales and marketing teams working together, but it's a whole company effort. How do you define your go-to-market strategy such that when you get into the sales phase, and anybody selling enterprise software has to actively think about this. If you are, if you're selling, like we'll call it on-demand software or software you put in your credit card, like all of the learning happens online. Like you're not talking to a seller. Yeah. This is where you get like the pricing page with all the different configurations and the checkboxes, then, you know, like compare us to competitors and all of this. But when you're selling enterprise software where there's like, there's project management associated with how this thing is going to get delivered, you really do have to sit down and go, okay, what are we, you have to get outside of your own head. This always happens with sales. Even the best salespeople will tell me, will say this. So I don't think I'm picking on salespeople here. But you have to get outside of your own perspective and how great your product is. And you have to meet the customer where they're at. Like I work for Boulder. Boulder builds high performing global teams. Do people who come to work with an outsourcer, do they know what they need? Or are they, they're coming in and they're saying, I heard that I got a contract for 24/5 support and we've got to hire a global team ASAP. Can you help? You know, they don't know everything that is great about what you offer. So you have to start by asking questions, and this is your discovery call. Mm-hmm. And so you're asking, you know, well, how important is this to you? What are your other goals? What are your other needs? And so you're trying during that stage, you're not all, like really the sales team is trying to find that ideal customer that is going to fit with where, what the company offers. And so when you have companies that offer premium brands, Boulder, consider ourselves a premium brand in the BPO space. When you offer a premium brand, you usually have to do some kind of education about why would you choose me? Why would you choose us? And that's a process. Like that's not going to just happen automatically. You're not just going to be like, here's all our stuff. Don't you like us? You know, it's like,
don't you like us?
Yes, we're great. Everybody likes us. No, you have to say like, you know, this is where really good sales processes come in. And you know, if you work in a support or a success or customer experience side of the business, you're trusting that your sales leaders and your marketing leaders are working on this messaging such that when they get in front of customers, they're doing good discovery. They're asking the right questions. They're understanding the needs so that when they propose whatever your business is as a solution, they can say, I heard you say X, and that's why we do Y to meet that particular need. And when that's not happening and that doesn't happen well, that's where you get the stuff in the, you know, in the support inbox or with the success team where you're, it's like, how do we end up with this customer? Like they said that we promised them X, Y, and Z and we don't do that, you know? And it's like, well, that's a big problem. You know, yeah, you got the sale, you're able to report the sale, but you don't actually do what was sold. So that's where that can get out of hand, but you got to do that work, and you got to make sure that what you actually deliver aligns with what you're selling.
Now, when you were initially explaining the whole process of journey mapping, I got to thinking about the boundary aspect of things and how having to do this, you actually have to commit to understanding the spaces and the impact that they all have. When you first started doing this journey mapping and this way of thinking, what kind of a change did you see within the company of just understanding everyone's piece of the puzzle?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know. I'm thinking of Full Story as an example. In my time there, and I left there in 2022, we never got to a full understanding of things from a customer's perspective. And we were a really customer focused company, like really, like genuinely cared about the customer. It is so, so hard to get different teams and different departments to align around looking at customers from their perspective. And so we started to see pockets of it, like in our cross-functional team, I would say we got there, like we had our journey stages and we could talk about it. Unless, and I think this is, I'm looking at Gene Bliss's book right here. Highly recommend it. It's good. Even if you're not, don't have the title chief customer officer or don't anticipate ever having it, it can be really good because she gets at like the first principles and what you need to be successful. So like in order to do the thing that you're saying, which is like really transform the culture about it, you have to have buy-in at the highest level of the organization that this is how we're going to talk about customers. When we talk about the customer's journey, we're going to use these stages and these names. And then you have the habit of, you know, I was just talking to customer so-and-so who's in the discovery phase, or whatever you call it, you know, or they're in the awareness phase. They had just learned about us through a Google search and now they're excited to get started. Like if you can do that at the executive level, then that can start to socialize things and really have change. And so Jean Bliss writes about that in her book. And she has other things that like really a lot of practical techniques. Like you can have, like back when we had physical offices, you can have customer learning rooms, which is like a literal physical room that people can go into and that are, they're encouraged to have meetings in, you know, where you can see customer stories on the wall and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so there are things like that. I mean, like a classic one is just highlighting customer stories at company all hands meetings. You know, that's not necessarily putting a focus on the journey map, but it is putting a focus on the customer. And I know FullStory did that. Boulder does that sort of thing. That's really good work. Oh, and I can say, like, a thing I'm working on with Boulder is we're doing an exercise like this. It's not a journey mapping exercise, so to speak, although I'm making a map as I go. It is like a, hey, how does this all work? You know, how do all of our processes work? Because all of our teams are very high functioning and mm-hmm. they're getting the job done. But in terms of how do we explain all this, that's hard. And so like it's one of those things, it seems obvious, but it's like, no, there are actually very few people who understand end-to-end how everything works. But your customers will understand how everything works because they're living through it. So don't let them be the only ones.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. No, that's a really good point. As a support leader, what really struck a chord when you were first explaining this to me was the stage when you're leading a team, when you're able to have that high functioning team handling the day to day, and you're able to look at the bigger picture of the support experience, and you're analyzing the data, you are asking those why questions to identify the trends and really see the root cause of the struggle that caused someone to need to reach out. That is so well connected with the journey mapping, but that is that typically like phase one of a company deciding to move forward with the journey mapping? Is it like understanding, okay, we've got all this data on trends. Now let's see like where this actually is happening, or like how does that all come into fruition?
Yeah, if you are, I'll just say this, if you are working at a startup between 1 and 500 people and you're leading a support team, if your customer doesn't already have the journey map, you're probably going to be the one to bring it up. Your marketing team might, or your product team might, and actually good product teams will. I mean, and they'll always have some aspect of a journey. And so I don't want to say that like it's never going to exist, but your team probably is already going to have it. And if it doesn't, there's not a reason you can't be the one to bring it up. For me, I think it was in the context of coaching calls that I found reaching for a journey map was the most helpful. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, a lot of times when we're doing coaching conversations with our team members and they're, you know, how's your week going? You know, let's look at some tickets together. I got this ticket. It was really frustrating. Sales is just like, man. And you look at the ticket from sales and you see how like, man, they really dropped the ball. Like they just like our team prides itself on delivering an outstanding experience and appropriate SLA and, you know, with the right information. And the seller just didn't even bother to respond in Zendesk. And then the customer kept asking and we had it. Like, and so you're like commiserating with your team member in this kind of coaching call. And you go, well, how do we understand it? Like, how do we actually understand what's happening? Because if you start barking up that tree with their manager, the salesperson's manager, you get frustrated there too. Because you're like, well, it seems like their manager doesn't really care. Their head of sales doesn't really care. And the CEO is actually really happy with what the sales team is doing. And doesn't anybody care about customer experience here? And you kind of get that. But then by mapping it out, you go, well, what was happening in that phase? Now, maybe there is, it's true. You don't want to deliver a bad experience to anybody because that does negatively affect your brand. This is why, like, you know, like the spam emails from your SDRs are like, there's a cost to that, you know, like yeah. It seems like it's generating revenue, but there's a brand cost to that. But you go back earlier in the journey and you go, well, huh, this customer or this prospect, come to think of it, I don't know that they ever would have become a customer. Like they're working for a 2-person startup and they're frustrated that our salesperson didn't get back to them. And we have a $20,000 minimum making these things up. But like, there's some reason that they didn't get back to them. And then you go, well, our salespeople are incentivized to provide like outstanding service to the people that they think are going to be the best fit, like that they've qualified. So this person wasn't qualified. And that's why like, oh, can't we can understand why they maybe didn't prioritize that. Now there might still be things that you do because you are advocating for the overall experience and you're protecting the brand. But that kind of sets up your coach, like that helped me in coaching conversations be like, they're not as bad as you think. The people on the other side of the business are trying, they're working for the same team.
Right. Well, I think that goes back to just shifting your mindset of we're all doing our best. let's try to understand the why behind these choices that they're making and see how they align in their picture. It is what a support professional does on a daily basis when they're talking to customers. It's right. just often a hard thing to do when you're thinking about others within the business to take yourself out of it. And remember, not everybody has the same mindset or skill set that you have. Let's think about the salesperson and what their journey is like and what their headspace is when they were seeing this ticket. And that's exactly what you just explained. It's figuring out that why behind the choice.
Yes, that's right.
Which is so cool. And it's so valuable. I mean, that is how you can create a unit within your company, not teams, like an actual well-understood, supportive unit to bring about change for the customer and understand the choices that everyone's making.
That's right. And I think, you know, when you're positioning yourself to, you know, whether you're on the executive leadership team or you're working with the executive leadership team, you know, and you're saying, why work with me as a support leader? And you can bring that awareness, say, hey, tell me about how you understand the journey from the customer's perspective. You know, you're working with an early stage startup and it's like, well, we have the marketing team doing this. And it's like, okay, how do you name the stages? And it's not to use it as a cudgel to beat over the heads of your coworkers. Sure. It's not that. It's like, hey, this can actually be a really powerful device. And so if you can provide that leadership to your colleagues to say, let's agree on what the stages are. Let's talk about our customers in terms of stages and then the stages they're in, not in terms of our team. That's really powerful. And that's a really powerful tool for your executive team, for your CEO to go out and drive revenue. Because we don't think of it like this, but if you can align, it should be obvious, but if you can align around what customers care about and value, that's where you get revenue. And so anything that gets in the way of that and us focusing on our own teams and our own team's goals, individual functions, goals, gets in the way of value for customers. So this has a real potential to unlock real value for our companies.
What a great service you're providing. And I love that you're teaching folks within the support community about what this means and how they can utilize it, even like on a smaller scale, but bigger scale as well, to start to push this change within their company. And I think that this could be like, it could be one of those moments within startups when it forces everyone to just reflect a second and pause and see what the purpose of the company is. And that could be the start of change.
And the thing about it is the reason I like these conversations, but also these techniques and devices is that they're really low cost with mm-hmm. really high impact. So these are things with a lot of leverage. When you align on stage names, you'll actually find a little bit of resistance to that. Like that's something that you've got to decide on and people have to do. You know, like if you're going to have a company meeting, the CEO has to set the example and refer to things by journey names, you know, stages in the customer journey, talk about things from the client's perspective. But actually doing that costs nothing. It's just like a behavioral change. So it's actually costs next to nothing. You have to learn it. Yes, you do have to do that. But the value is you're aligned around the customer. You're not just saying, and here's the thing. Every small startup is going to say they're obsessed with the customer and they're going to be true. And the reason it's true is because you're small. It's easy. If you're a team of 4 people or 8 people or 10 people or 20, like you can yell across the room or Slack, like everybody can pounce and just, you're providing a great experience. It's as you grow, you've got to figure out how to stay aligned. And that's the whole thing about growth is trying to stay aligned. And of course, we want to stay aligned to hit OKRs and all this stuff. But are we staying aligned to really care about customers? It's like if you can start even while you're small, you know, if you were to pick up, you know, Chief Customer Officer 2.0, if you can just implement some of those techniques and make those part of the company culture, you know, like you highlight customer stories, you talk in terms of the journey stages that the customers use, you put things into customers' perspectives, you translate things in terms of customer value. Not in terms of the dollars they're paying, but in terms of how much value they're receiving. All of those things drive the kinds of cultural change at your company that ultimately will help align the entire company around customers and what they care about.
so important. That's the foundational work that you have to commit to doing and following through, because otherwise it's the actions speak louder than words thing. And you can say you're customer obsessed all day long, and the reality of it could be very different if no one really is aligned on what the actual purpose of this customer journey is.
That's right.
Awesome. Well, I like to end, even though I really feel like I could force you and hold you hostage for like another 2 hours to talk about this. But I'm excited to just kind of reflect on this and think about how I can utilize this in my day-to-day and in future endeavors. This was so valuable. Thank you, Ben. And
you're welcome.
I am super pumped to hear how everybody takes the talk that you're going to give at the Support Driven Expo. But before we end, I do like to end my calls with an opportunity to let you share what era you're in or what era you see yourself moving into. And I'm really curious.
I saw that. You had epic was the word. What epic are you in? I didn't know which word I would use, but I would say I'm still in an era of rest or sabbatical. I'm working, but I'm working fractionally. I'm working half-time for Boulder right now. And I would say I'm trying to discern what's next, but it's like, I'm really fuzzy about that. Yeah. So I've been a customer support leader. I've worked as a technical program manager. I've like done all these, like a ton of different things. And my brain is just like, I could do anything. I could do everything. Like I just, that's where I am. And so it's, that ends up being a challenge for me, because yeah, I want to, you know, it's like, so today we've been talking about customer experience. Sure. Yeah. Let me go do customer experience full time. Like I'd love that. But then I get talking about lots of other things, in different areas of work, and I get excited about that too. So for me, it's trying to, discern what am I really called to do? I'm hitting like squarely into midlife. And so I get to kind of be thoughtful about that and go, wow. And it almost feels like starting over, but with a whole life experience behind me to kind of inform the direction I'm going. So I'm excited about that. My wife is starting her first full-time job ever in the fall. And so
exciting.
I'm very excited for her. She's going to be an assistant teacher at my son's school. And we've got three kids. This is my middle child at a school that he's at. But it's going to be a big change for our family. You know, I have two adults working. And so just trying to figure out how do we get through that without, like, while maintaining what's really important. While maintaining what's really important is probably, that's part of this period of discernment and rest and sabbatical that I'm in, is kind of being like, because I would say, her finding that opportunity and us committing to it happened because we were in this period of rest. It was like, because before it was always Ben's career, Ben's career, Ben's career. And then now it's kind of like, wait a second, maybe it's good if we're both working, you know? Yeah. An assistant teacher at this school isn't going to make as much income, but what are the other benefits that that has to our family? And how does being more balanced, how is that helpful for our family? And so I guess that's the era I'm in, is trying to discern that sort of thing. So if any of your listeners have have thoughts for me or want to reach out or ideas or feedback, because I'm open to any guidance, to any advice, and just because I'm feeling kind of blind, kind of in the dark, but it's good. I'm in a good spot. I don't feel, sometimes I feel a little anxiety in my chest, but you know,
it's kind of unknown. You're going into a very unknown territory, but it sounds like such an exciting time for your family, because you're able to do so thoughtfully and you are approaching this as a, how can we do this to make our family as a unit? I mean, it's a lot of the same work that you're doing with the journey mapping. You know, you're thinking about the impact and everything's role in the whole bigger picture of your family and succeeding and being happy and fulfilled. And you're allowing yourself to do that. That's awesome. That's huge. And of course it feels overwhelming because you have so many skills at your disposal, but you're entering into this new space of, you're able to be, yeah, it's a fresh start maybe, but it's a confident fresh start. You're mm-hmm. secure in yourself. You're secure in your abilities, and you're able to articulate that when you decide what area, corner, space you want to explore. And so congratulations. That's fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Of course. Of course. And you've also got two newsletters that you unleash into the world. And that's awesome as well. What a time commitment though for you too. When is this rest happening?
Well, my newsletters have been the one to take a hit lately. That's been the thing that I've deprioritized. Part of it is just like my kids have gotten all into, like, it was just like the spring sports and Cub Scouts. Oh, and yeah. I joined the men's softball team for
nice
reasons. It was good. I can still do it, but I'm like, man, it's a lot different than when I was in high school. And, but those kinds of things took away from my writing. But the thing, I love writing. And, I think writing has a really beautiful clarifying function to it. And if you want to work through thoughts to have them be clear so that you understand them and they can be teachable, try writing about them. It's hard, but I've been doing it for so long, it's become relatively easy. So like I just, on my customers, et cetera, Substack, I just published one on, it was something I wrote for Boulder. It was about 4 common outsourcing mistakes, and it was easy. They loved it. Like the Boulder, you know, the content this was my first content piece for them. I was like, you know, I write a newsletter. I'll do content that I publish on your blog. And so we published it there, and then I put it in my newsletter. But I was like, this is easy because it's just, I can see things from first principles and write and take things I've observed and distill it into a story. And so once I get going, it's okay. It's about finding the time to get something going. That's yeah. been the challenge. And then lately I felt I really wanted to write about more spiritual things because I'm Catholic and that's a big part of my life. And so I started another one that I called Aura Et Cetera. It's my, I have a customer, et cetera. And then I have Aura Et Cetera. That's the Latin word for prayer. So So I started putting some thoughts in there. And that one's got one post and another one baking. And I'm hoping to have, because I kept having things that I was like, I want to write about this. Where do I put it? It's like, this isn't in my customers, et cetera newsletter. I had a couple people be like, publish whatever you want. It's your own. And I'm like, like the MBA inside of me is like, you've got customer segments and you got to think about your segments and stuff like that. So I was like, I'll segment this out a little bit. Yeah.
That's the first step. Like now you've taken that weight off of you. You have a space for it. So when you feel like you need to spend time to share what it is that you want to talk about in different ways with customers or with Aura, like, you have space. You can explore that, which is really, really great.
Yeah, that's exactly it. This is a place I can put things. Even if I just draft the idea and I don't publish it, it gives me a place to go get those thoughts out. And it's been very helpful for that.
I'm just so excited for you, Ben. You've got a lot of cool things happening. You're thinking about things in a very purposeful way. And when you do that, I've often found you set yourself up for what you're supposed to do. And I know that while I'm sure it feels very gray right now, the future is going to be clear when it's supposed to be clear.
Yeah,
and your family is going to be so pumped to be in this new phase. I'm sure there'll be a little bit of growing pains, but the fact that your wife's going to enter into this new part of her journey with one of your children is beautiful. Like, that's so special.
Yeah. So excited for her.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to let you go. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you so much for your time. And
you're welcome.
I hope that we can continue this conversation in any form that it finds
absolutely
down the road. I'm excited to see where you go.
Thanks for having me on, Sarah. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day, Ben.
All right. You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. And that's another episode of Epical Growth. If you haven't.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Ben, for sharing your insights with the supportive audience. I think it is easy as a support-focused person to lose perspective on all of the other ways that our customers are interacting with our company that aren't directly support. And that idea of naming all of the parts of the customer's journey and then particularly naming them from the customer's own perspective instead of from the business's perspective, I think that's really powerful. when you've got a shared set of labels and everybody that you're dealing with internally understands what you're all referring to, so much easier to understand each other and to work together against a problem that the customer's seeing instead of butting heads over who owns it. And I loved Ben's point that it is easy to be customer obsessed when you're small. It's that staying aligned as you grow. That is the hard work. So maybe go out, see if there's an existing journey map for your customers. And if there isn't one, maybe you're the one who starts one. So the map itself, of course, it's just an artifact. It's the conversations that map will enable and support that can really change things for you and for your customers. So thank you for listening. I will be back next time with a normal episode of The Supportive. But if you like what you heard today, please go and subscribe to Epical Growth in your podcast app. There is a lot of great conversations to enjoy over there already. I'm sure there's more to come. Bye for now.